Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in this segment we're going to begin an examination of some of the historical and political background to the current crisis in the former Yugoslavia. Specifically, we're going to be taking a look at the historical relationship between the Croatian fascists, the Ustaši, who held sway in Croatia during World War II and were allied with Nazi Germany, and the ongoing alliance between residual Ustaši elements and the political and national security establishments, intelligence systems in particular, of both Germany and the United States. In particular, we're going to be taking a look at the implications of this sordid relationship for the development of the current crisis in the former Yugoslavia. We're going to begin by taking a look at an article from the magnificent Germany Alert newsletter, one of the very best sources for information about the reemergence of German fascism. The Germany Alert of August 11th, 1995, has the following story headlined, Germany Covers Up Croatian Murders. This deals with the recent Croatian offensive in what used to be Yugoslavia, and in particular the German backing for that Croatian offensive, and as we shall see, there was ample United States backing for that offensive as well. Indeed, there is every indication that a U.S. covert operation helped to militarily buttress the Croatian offensive. As we shall see, and as we have seen in past broadcasts, in particular the archive shows available from Archives on Audio, the German-American-Croatian cooperation has had much to do with precipitating the crisis in the former Yugoslavia. In particular, as we looked at in supplements to Radio Free America program number 36, as well as in an earlier series of segments dealing with Reunited Germany, the New Danger, German and American backing for the secession of Croatia and Slovenia from what used to be Yugoslavia precipitated the breakup and the current crisis. Again, I refer listeners to Radio Free America program number 36, in particular a supplement to that from the summer of 1993, and also earlier segments in the 13-part series dealing with Reunited Germany, the New Danger. This particular article, again from Germany Alert of August 11th of 1995, is headlined, Germany Covers Up Croatian Murders. It's dateline Sarajevo, and it reads, United Nations officials, Great Britain, and France are among the stunned parties to the German-planned, U.S.-backed Croatian blitzkrieg that has set off the largest human refugee catastrophe in Europe since World War II. Croatia used tanks and guns supplied by Germany, most of them from the former East German army, as it shelled refugees trying to flee its troops, most of whom were trained by the German Bundeswehr. In Zagreb, President Franjo Tudjman, a nationalist and anti-Semite, thanked Chancellor Helmut Kohl and Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel for all their support. Tudjman had a lot to be thankful for. In addition to inventing Croatia 5 years ago, as it did under Hitler, the only other time the place was called, quote, independent, unquote, Germany ran the public relations blitz which accompanied the battle plan. A contingent from the German Interior Ministry, two units from Bonn's Foreign Affairs Department, and German media specialists, believed to be BND espionage agents, stage-managed a highly successful effort to minimize negative Croatian press. UN officials, French officials, British military brass, and journalists expressed astonishment that Croatian atrocities, like the shelling of fleeing Serbian refugees, received very low-level, quote, play, unquote, in the media compared to atrocities blamed on Serbs. A Dutch military official, who declined to be quoted by name, declared that Germany and the U.S. had succeeded in internationalizing the Yugoslav civil war in their action. Quote, that is the most irresponsible action of all, unquote, the official said. By the way, in previous archive shows, in particular Radio Free America number 37, the massive 45-hour archive show dealing with, or entitled, I should say, How the United States Lost the Second World War, the profound German fascist and Nazi influence on the American political and national security establishments is described. Also the American industrial and financial establishments as well. By the way, we're going to be going back into the German, Nazi, fascist, and Croatian fascist influence on the American political and national security establishments in the second part of this series, the very next segment. That, again, from Germany Alert of August 11th, 1995. Note that in addition to the diplomatic support of the German government, which, again, helped to precipitate the current crisis in the former Yugoslavia, note that the Croatian army has relied heavily for training and equipment on the German military that we also dealt with in the Reunited Germany, the New Danger series. Note also that the German Interior Ministry, Foreign Affairs Department, and also German media specialists believed to be agents of the BND, the German Intelligence Service, in turn evolved from the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi Eastern Front spy outfit that we've talked about so often, were, according to Germany Alert, instrumental in helping to effect a very effective media campaign minimizing Croatian atrocities. More about the effects of the Croatian offensive that took place in August of 1995. We're now going to turn to the San Francisco Chronicle from Friday, August 11th of 1995. This particular article is by Frank Viviano, V-I-V-I-A-N-O, a Chronicle staff writer currently covering European developments. Viviano, by the way, is doing superb work. This particular article is datelined Kresevo, K-R-E-S-E-V-O, Bosnia. It's headlined, Greater Croatia is a Reality. Subheaded, Zagreb Rules Part of Carved Up Bosnia. Again, this story from the San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, August 11th of 1995, it reads in part, as the Croatian army completes its lightning reconquest of the Krajina, a storm of international concern is swirling around Zagreb's ultimate intentions. The most pressing question is whether the Krajina triumph will lead to a final carve-up of Bosnia, creating a, quote, greater Croatia, unquote, alongside the territory seized by rebel Bosnian Serbs. The answer, unmistakable to a traveler in Bosnia itself, is that Greater Croatia already exists. Skipping down in this story, of some foreign journalists and their observations of the Croatian offensive in Bosnia, the foreign journalists sent to cover the invasion were not allowed past Livno, L-I-V-N-O, until the fighting was over. One reason, say many analysts, was Croatia's desire to prevent images of civilian casualties from reaching the outside world. KNIN, Knin, and other Krajina population centers were mercilessly bombed and shelled by the Croatian army. Another reason, some contend, was to conceal the source of the weapons that brought the Krajina Serbs to their knees in 3 days. Quote, the best of the Croats' armaments were German and American-made, said Christian Archer, a Frenchman. Quote, I saw them with my own eyes. Archer is a mercenary, a soldier of fortune, who claims to have watched the unloading of U.S. and German equipment while on his way to join an international volunteer brigade in central Bosnia. His testimony is supported by European military experts and humanitarian organizations. Four aid workers said that they too had seen shipments of U.S. arms and munitions arrive at Croatia's Dalmatian coast in the past 2 months. The Americans, quote, fathered the creation of the Croat-Bosnian Federation, and directly or indirectly they have rearmed the Croats, said Pierre Hosner, H-A-S-S-N-E-R, a leading French intelligence analyst at the Paris-based Center for International Studies and Research. In addition, a small group of retired American military officers have helped train the new Croatian army. The officers are working for a Virginia-based firm called Military Professionals Incorporated, State Department officials confirmed earlier this week. Under a contract signed with the Pentagon in 1994, they have made several visits to Zagreb to advise the Croatians how to ensure military discipline and civilian control of the army. The retired generals are paid by Croatia. Again, note that the information here in the San Francisco Chronicle dovetails with that in the Germany Alert article from 8-11 of 95. In particular, the stage managing of public relations, according to Germany Alert, by German officials probably affiliated with BND. According to the Chronicle, it was the Croatians themselves, or at least they did not state otherwise. But in any event, there has been a very effective public relations campaign to minimize the Croatian atrocities in this particular offensive. Indeed, the general coverage of the Yugoslavian war is slanted in the United States. This is not to hold a brief for what the Serbs have been doing. There's plenty of blame to go around, but the blame for precipitating this conflict lies with the residual Croatian fascists, who are now back in power in Croatia, as well as their German and American backers. And indeed, the abundant evidence of Croatian atrocities has not received the publicity it deserves in the United States. Note again, both the German and American roles in not only arming the Croatians for this offensive, but in helping to train their military. An editorial in the New York Times from August 8th of 1995 discusses the fact that the recent Croatian offensive has not received the condemnation that it deserved in the United States. Indeed, the United States has helped to buttress that particular offensive, and also notes that there is plenty of blame to go around historically and politically. Indeed, this particular editorial begins to get into the historical and political background of this crisis, and we're going to take a look at that background and how the events of the World War II era are not only coming back to haunt us today, but to a certain extent at least are repeating themselves. This particular editorial, again from the New York Times of August 8th of 1995, is headlined "The Croatian Offensive." Skipping down, it reads, "In less than 4 days, 100,000 Croatian troops took over the vast Krajina region, inhabited by Serbs for centuries. Tens of thousands of Serbian refugees are now streaming east into Bosnia and Serbia. The offensive also enabled Croatia's president, Franjo Tudjman, to help break the long Serbian siege of Bihac, B-I-H-A-C, one of Bosnia's four remaining enclaves supposedly under United Nations protection. The United States and Germany signaled clear sympathy for the Croatian offensive, while Russia, Britain, and France strongly opposed it. Serbia, interestingly, stood by passively. That sends a strong signal that Serbia's real interests in Croatia lie elsewhere, some 50 miles away in the eastern border zone between the two countries, which Belgrade yesterday hastened to reinforce. Formally, Washington and Bonn say they would have preferred a peaceful resolution of the Krajina issue. Both publicly regret the apparently large number of civilian casualties and Croatia's mistreatment of UN peacekeepers. But both countries are happy to see somebody fight the Serbs and welcome the relief of the besieged citizens of Bihac." Again, B-I-H-A-C. "The Croats, they note, are not only reclaiming their own occupied territory and helping Bosnia, a neighbor and ally, defend itself." The Croats, they note, are only reclaiming their own occupied territory and helping Bosnia, a neighbor and ally, defend itself. True enough for now. But Croatia's 20th century record of aggression and, quote, ethnic cleansing, unquote, is every bit as bad as Serbia's." I would interrupt. This is incorrect. Croatia's 20th century record of aggression and ethnic cleansing is infinitely worse than Serbia's and could not in any size, shape, form, or manner be compared with Serbia's. This is quite simply a lie by the New York Times. Just how monstrous the Croatian Ustashi were, we are going to see. By the way, we've dealt with that in other broadcasts, Radio Free America program number 17 being one of those programs. We also took a look at that in Radio Free America 36, and we're going to discuss the almost unimaginable brutality and savagery that the Croatian Ustashi demonstrated during World War II, those same elements simply having been reconstituted in the new, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia. Note the quotes. This last dishonest sentence, again, resuming with the Times editorial, "But Croatia's 20th century record of aggression and, quote, ethnic cleansing, unquote, is every bit as bad as Serbia's. Memories of the atrocities committed by Croatia's fascist Ustashi regime against Serbs, Muslims, and Jews during World War II helped fuel the Serbian revolt in the Krajina 4 years ago. In the latest Krajina operation, Croatian forces have ignored their promises of respect for the rights of Serbian civilians." Indeed, they have. And once again, note that the memories of the savagery that the Croatian Ustashi manifested was indeed one of the things that helped to precipitate the brutal Serbian reaction to the dissolution of Yugoslavian independence. This is not to say that the shelling of Sarajevo is excusable, but nonetheless it is comprehensible. And what we're basically seeing is the perpetuation of a blood feud that began with World War II. There was an excellent op-ed piece that appeared in the New York Times op-ed page of Wednesday, August 9th of 1995 that gives a very clear insight into how distorted the American political view of the Yugoslavian conflict is. This op-ed piece is by Charles G. Boyd, B-O-Y-D. It's headlined, "America Prolongs the War in Bosnia." Charles G. Boyd, by the way, is described as a retired Air Force general and the deputy commander-in-chief of the U.S. European Command from November 1992 to July 1995. This particular op-ed piece reads, in part at least, "Having spent the last 2 years as deputy commander of the U.S. European Command, I have found that my views on the frustrating events in Bosnia differ from much of the conventional wisdom in Washington. This is the product of seeing the war up close almost continuously in all its ugliness. The linchpin of America's approach in the Balkans has been the notion that this is a war of good versus evil. From that premise, the United States has called for a negotiated resolution of the conflict, even as it has labeled as war criminals those with whom it would negotiate. It has used United Nations resolutions couched in neutral terms to punish one side in the war. It has pushed for more humanitarian aid, even as it became clear that this would subsidize conflict. It has supported the legitimacy of a leadership, the Bosnian government, that has become increasingly ethnocentric in its makeup, single-party in its rule, and manipulative in its diplomacy. Most damaging of all, American actions in the Balkans have been at sharp variance with stated American policy. We say we want peace, but we have encouraged a deepening of the war. All factions in the former Yugoslavia have pursued the same objective, avoiding minority status in Yugoslavia or any successor state, and they have used the tools most readily available to achieve that end. America has supported all such claims except one, that of the Bosnian Serbs. As one Serb officer confided to a member of my staff, he did not understand why his people had been, quote, satanized, unquote, for insisting on the same rights of self-determination that had been accorded for all others. For some, the war has become a tragedy of proportions that parallel the Holocaust. In this view, the Serbs are the forces of darkness responsible for most, if not all, of the atrocities, the ethnic cleansing, mass rapes, concentration camps, and indiscriminate killing. Regrettably, such behavior is not unprecedented in Balkan conflicts, and to say that it is peculiarly Serb behavior says more about the observer than the Balkans. We must see the Balkans as they are, not as we wish them to be. The public view of this war has come largely through the eyes of one party, the Bosnian Muslims, a people whose status as victim has been a valuable and jealously protected tool of war. Make no mistake, Serb behavior has been reprehensible. The question is, how bad, on what scale? Analysis of what has happened is not a claim of moral equivalence, nor is it a justification for the actions being examined. Sarajevo is instructive. The city's terrible suffering does not change the reality that the image of Sarajevo, starved, battered, and besieged, is a precious tool for Bosnia's government. As the government was commemorating the 1,000th day of siege, local markets were selling oranges, lemons, and bananas at prices only slightly higher than in Western Europe. Gasoline was 35% cheaper than in Germany. A World Food Program survey in May of 1994 found that after a tough winter for Sarajevo, no one was malnourished and only a small percentage of the population was undernourished. Even the rate of violent deaths had gone down considerably in 1994, 324 for the year, according to the United Nations. The per capita rate was comparable to that in some North American cities and slightly lower than in Washington. Nonetheless, press coverage and government statements gave the poignant image of unrelenting siege. The war has redrawn the demographic map. Fear, combat, and nationalist extremism have displaced upward of 2 million people. The engine for much of this has been Serbian. Serb excesses have been common and well documented. Less generally known are Serb population movements. During my visit to Sarajevo in February, a senior United Nations official told me that there may be as few as 500,000 Serbs on Serb-held territory in Bosnia. Combined with the 200,000 Serbs that he estimated are living on Bosnian-controlled land, the Serb population in Bosnia may be only about half its pre-war total. Like their former neighbors, Bosnia's Serbs can point to fear, combat, and forced expulsion as the reason for their movement, although the proportions are likely different. More than 90% of the Serbs in western Slavonia were, quote, ethnically cleansed, unquote, when Croatian troops overran that UN-protected area in May. This operation appeared to differ from Serbian actions around the UN-safe areas of Srebrenica and Zepa only in the degree of Western hand-wringing and CNN footage the latter elicited. Currently, 150,000 or more Serbs are fleeing ancestral homes in Krajina, yet this exodus has generated little of the concern accorded the Muslims. Ethnic cleansing evokes condemnation only when it is committed by Serbs, not against them. The popular image of the war is one of unrelenting Serb expansion. Much of what the Croatians call the occupied territories is land held by Serbs for more than three centuries. The same is true of most Serb land in Bosnia, what the Western media frequently refer to as the 70% of Bosnia seized by rebel Serbs. In short, the Serbs are not trying to conquer new territory, but merely to hold on to what was already theirs. The recent Serb moves against the eastern enclaves represent the only significant changes in their area of control in nearly 2 years. It is a remarkable achievement of Bosnian diplomacy, reinforced by the government's rhetoric after the fall of Srebrenica, that the Muslims have gained significant military parity with the Serbs while maintaining the image of hapless victim in the eyes of much of the world. It is all the more remarkable since before the attack on Srebrenica, the Muslims had been on the strategic offensive for more than a year. The armies in Bosnia, Serb and Muslim, are asymmetrical in military power but very closely matched. Time is quite likely on the Muslims' side. The United States' approach to the war has been torn by a fundamental contradiction. It says its objective is to end the war through a negotiated settlement, but what it wants is to influence the outcome in favor of the Muslims. It watched approvingly as Muslim offensives began this spring, even though these attacks destroyed a ceasefire Washington has supported. This duplicity, so crude and obvious to all in Europe, has weakened America's moral authority to provide any effective diplomatic leadership. Worse, because of this, the United States has prolonged the conflict while bringing it no closer to resolution. At the end of the day, the United States must face the reality that it cannot produce an enduring solution with military force, air or ground, but only a temporary one that will last until it departs. The first step is for the United States to announce that it really does oppose a military solution and then follow through by its actions. That would require a cessation of all the nonsense rhetoric about lifting an embargo that in reality has long since been lifted, and about leveling a playing field that is as nearly level as it is likely to get. Senator Bob Dole's much-trumpeted desire to lift the embargo would be amusing, but for the fact that it would almost certainly lead to the introduction of United States ground forces. Again, I think that editorial speaks very eloquently to the distortions that we in the United States have been seeing in our media. Indeed, the situation of the former Yugoslavia from a geographical and population or geographical and demographic standpoint is far more complex than we have been told. I would note also the book The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens, the profound slanting of American power politics in the direction of the Arabian, the Middle Eastern oil-producing nations, Saudi Arabia in particular, and its resulting effect in a pro-Islamic bias, despite American preconceptions of a pro-Israeli bias. That particular expose is one that should be examined. In particular, there's a four-part interview with the author John Loftus available from Archives on Audio. In order to understand the historical background of what is going on now in Yugoslavia, it's important, what used to be Yugoslavia, it's important to understand the history of the, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia. Indeed, Croatia has never been independent. It has always been and still is a client state of German fascism, a fascism which never disappeared. In the World War II period, the Yugoslavian ethnic federation was broken apart when Croatian separatists basically allied themselves with the armies of Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, and after the German invasion of Yugoslavia on April 10th of 1941, the brutal Croatian state proceeded to liquidate hundreds of thousands of Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies. Indeed, some 700,000 Serbs were slaughtered by the Ustashi. What we're going to do now is to turn to a book called Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America. That book was authored by Howard Blum, and it's published in hardcover by Quadrangle Books of the New York Times Book Company. It's copyright hardcover, it's the hardcover edition, copyright 1977. In this last couple of segments that we're going to look at, we're going to examine the slaughter that took place in the, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia after the German conquest of that country. Again, Croatia was a German client state during World War II. And what we're going to look at is the Minister of the Interior's extermination program. That fellow was named Andrija Artukovic, A-N-D-R-I-J-A is his first name, A-R-T-U-K-O-V-I-C. His nickname was the Himmler of the Balkans. And as we're going to see, the slaughter that was visited upon Jews, Serbs, and Gypsies during World War II by Artukovic and the Ustashi is one of the things that helped set the stage for the retaliation to the brutality that the Serbs have joined in the current war in Yugoslavia. Reading from Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America. 5 days after the proclamation of the, quote, independent, unquote, state of Croatia, Pavlic, that's Ante Pavlic, the head of state, and Artukovic, accompanied by German and Italian troops, led a contingent of 200 armed and uniformed Ustashi soldiers through the streets of Zagreb. They had returned, finally triumphant, to take control. Immediately, a Nazi-sponsored cabinet was announced. Pavlic as chief of state, and as his number two man, the interior minister Andrija Artukovic. The decade of exile was finally over. For years, power had been the obsession. Now, as independent Croatia realized a new, more terrible obsession would take its place, the complete and permanent institutionalization of this power. The ferocious brutality that that powerless exile had masked, Ustashe rule would quickly expose. During this first summer alone, an estimated 180,000 Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies would be slaughtered. The man directing this genocide was Andrija Artukovic, skipping down. But legislation was not a sufficient solution to the, quote, Jewish question, unquote. The, quote, decisive and healthy grasp, unquote, which Artukovic boasted about to the Sabor, came about in the form of decree, and it's all in Roman numerals, I'm not even going to bother trying to decipher it. This law, signed by Artukovic, legalized the establishment of 20 concentration camps. The camps were controlled directly by Artukovic. It was the Intelligence Service, Security Service, and Ustashe Police Unit, specifically under the command of the Minister of the Interior, which organized the mass arrests and supervised the exterminations. Jasenovac's, Jasenovac, a former brickyard, was transformed under the personal direction of Artukovic into the largest Croatian extermination camp. Artukovic, working with the assistance of Adolf Eichmann, supervised the conversion of the brick kilns into ovens where thousands of Serbs and Jews were burned alive. Death at these camps, though, was not just by anonymous fire. The Ustashe, more so than even the Gestapo, demanded a more personal involvement in their evil. The Ustashe murderers killed their victims with an atavistic passion, throat slashings, eye gougings, tongue extractions, axe decapitations, and disembowelments. All were common ways of death for, quote, enemies of the state, unquote. The Ustashe seemed to lust after barbarism, personally challenging each other to respond more wildly to Pavlich's, quote, call to blood, unquote. At Jasenovac's, contests were conducted to see which Ustashe could execute the fastest with his graviso, a long, curve-bladed knife. That's G-R-A-V-I-S-O. Petar Brzica was the champion. His graviso cut through 1,300 throats in a single night. That, again, some of the historical background to what is going on currently in what used to be Yugoslavia. One of the reasons why the Serbs have reacted as forcibly as they have. And indeed, the situation there is far, far more complex than we have been told, although certainly what the Serb excesses are not to be excused. They are at least, they have been matched by the excesses of the Croatians. And the coverage of that conflict has been heavily, heavily biased. I made references to some of the archive shows that are available. Those are available from a tape duplication service called Archives on Audio. They are available at P.O. Box 170023. That's in San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. There's also a 20-page catalog available from Archives on Audio that lists all of the archive shows, gives a synoptic account of each archive show, and cross-references the programs with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. In the next segment, we're going to take a look not only at what happened to Andrija Artukovic after the end of World War II, but we're going to take a look at the incorporation of residual Croatian Ustashe elements into the U.S. political and intelligence establishments, and we're going to examine the Croatian fascist influence on modern American history, one of the important elements of the foundation to the biased policy and media coverage that the war in the former Yugoslavia is getting. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.